Hi, everyone, and welcome to Book Hype, episode number 133. Today, we're going to be talking about the importance of own voices. My name is Karen. I'm joined by Brittany, and I'm joined by our special guest, Ariana. Hi, everyone.
Hello.
How are you guys doing today?
Good.
Yeah.
Great.
That's good. Ariana, thank you for coming on. This episode has been, not this one specifically, but having Ariana on the show has been like long time coming, like really long time coming. So I'm glad we're finally doing it.
Yes, I'm excited.
Well, we are happy to have you here. And as usual, we always kick this off by talking about what we've been reading. I'm just going to skip over me because, as per usual, guys, I'm just falling behind on everything, but I'm trying. I really am, I promise. So, Ariana, as our special guest, what have you been reading lately?
I'm in the middle of reading Wind Witch by Susan Dennard, which is the second book in her Witchlands. I think it was a quartet. Now it might be like a five book. What is that called?
Quintet?
Oh, quintet. I was going to be like a pentaget. but it's really delightful. I mean, I'm really enjoying it because I love her newsletter. And so she gives updates on her book. And I love it because you get to see the writing process and how hard it is. So I feel very invested that it's completed. And I'm like, yay, you did it. So, but it's, I'm enjoying it so far.
Cool. And Brittany, what have you been reading?
Well, I haven't slept all week, so I tried to read before going to bed, and that didn't help because I just ended up reading like four books instead of sleeping. So,
good for book hype, though.
Yeah, good for book hype. So I decided, because this Jane Austen episode is never going to happen, that I'd get ahead of the game a bit, and I started rereading, because I only have Northanger Abbey on my Kindle app on my phone, and so I was like, oh, I guess I'll just read some of this again and, like, you know, get to some of my favorite passages and all that stuff. So then I ended up finishing that, and so I was like, all right, well, let's move on to whatever else is on this Kindle app that I have downloaded and not read. And one of the books that I have was All the Single Ladies by Rebecca Traister. And I really have been kind of skimming it, not really reading it. I've been reading passages and stuff, which it's good, but I'm really only taking what I want from it. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's one way to do it. Then I have been listening. I decided, okay, well, clearly reading is keeping me up. Maybe if I listen to something, I will fall asleep. And that didn't help either. So I've been really enjoying listening to The Wanderers by Meg Howry. And that is a book that came out this month, and I had an Audible credit to kill. So I was like, all right, I'll read this. So it's about three astronauts who are training to go to Mars, but they have to live in this like simulated environment for a couple of years in order to be fully trained and adapted. And they start to kind of go crazy, and it's really good. It's sort of like The Martian, but not like The Martian. Like, there's less math involved, and I'm really enjoying it a lot. So I've actually been listening to that while trying to fall asleep and while driving, because then it just goes right into my commute. And then I got this other book, which I started just last night, and it's called The Last Builder. I don't know if anyone's ever heard of it. It's pretty good. I'm only two chapters in because I actually did fall asleep last night while also watching The Honeymooners. It's by Simon Graves, and I think everyone should just go to the Kindle store and pick up a copy of it because,
you know, I've heard some rave reviews about that book.
Yeah, all 5-star reviews. I hear everyone at Hypeable is really enthralled by it. So I think everyone should really pick up a copy. What do you think, Karen?
I think I hate you.
That's all I got.
yeah. Cool. Thanks. I don't actually hate you. I appreciate you both greatly. Okay, let's move on to something else. For our book bite section, we would like Ariana to talk about Y'all West, which is happening April 29th of this year. She went last year and has claimed that it's her favorite day of the year. And even though she reluctantly doesn't necessarily want to share it with the rest of the world, which Brittany and I totally understand that, let us know what it's about, and hopefully you can come back on after you go to Y'all West this year, and we can talk about your experience there.
Yeah, so Y'all West is actually my favorite day of the year, and it's been, gosh, will this be the third or fourth year?
Oh, wow.
That it's going on. So it's relatively newish, and the past years I've gone, last year it got bigger, but then before that it was kind of like an indie thing, or it felt like it to me, and it was, and I really enjoyed it because like nobody knew about it. It was my special secret of the best day of the year. But now it's gotten a lot bigger, and that's actually a good thing because I am not the intended target audience. That's for kids. So Y'all West is a young adult book festival in Santa Monica that takes place at Santa Monica High School and the Santa Monica Library. And basically really, really cool authors show up and they do panels on everything. And because it's in LA, they get quite a few like TV people and film people to come and do stuff as well. And there's food trucks and it's wonderful. And last year, I think for the first time, they actually bussed in kids from LA Unified, which was so cool. So Saturday was really crowded, but it was awesome. So they bussed in all these kids from their schools. I believe it was started by Margaret Stoll and Melissa De La Cruz, both of who are wonderful, delightful humans. And last year it was run, because every year they have like new chair people, by Marie Lou and Tahereh Mafi. And I remember when I went the first time, I was like, this is a very like diverse book festival, and not even like with their one diversity panel. It's just like diverse everywhere, which was really cool, probably because the people running it are women of color. But it's just such a cool experience, and I love it. The authors are so laid back. It's not like froofy and intense like some festivals can be. So I really love it. I don't know what else to say. The food is great. You get free sprinkles.
What?
Yeah.
That's cool.
I recommend it to everyone. Oh, this year on Friday, they're actually doing the school thing, I believe, at the library. So they're going to have like a school event. So if you're a teacher or you want to take your kids to the event, you can sign up online and, you can sign up your kids to go to the event on Friday. And then there's the wide event on Saturday, which is free, by the way. The whole festival is free, including the cupcakes, not including the food trucks.
That's amazing. It always really surprises me that it takes place in a high school, but then again, like an LA high school, probably a little bit bigger than
Santa Monica High School is gigantic. It is so huge. It's like a small city. So yes.
Wow. That's cool. Yeah. And hopefully if everything works out according to plan, we will have some exclusive stuff going up on Hypebeable as well, because Ariana is taking the charge on that. So look out for some articles and maybe some interviews on Hypebeable.com. And we will see if we can get Ariana on here after to talk to us about what happened and what book she picked up and what's got her really exciting coming up for the rest of the year. As long as you don't mind sharing.
I do not.
Awesome. Well, speaking of sharing, Ariana is going to share a little bit of knowledge with us about Own Voices, which Brittany and I did a little research on ahead of time, but I tried not to do too much because I'm very interested in what Ariana has to teach us. And I may ask some questions. Hopefully, if I do, I'll ask questions that our listeners are also asking. So please take it away about Own Voices.
Okay, so I'm going to describe what Own Voices is, because I know a lot of our listeners may not be aware of it. But the We Need Diverse Books campaign was started a few years ago, and I think more people are aware of that one. So we need diverse books and diversity in YA. We're both started with the goal of adding more diverse representation into children's literature and young adult literature. But that is kind of separate, or it's not separate, but Own Voices kind of branches off from that. And that Own Voices refers specifically to when an author and the protagonist of a book share the same marginalized identity. So for example, the author and the protagonist might both be blind, or the author and the protagonist might both be Cuban American, or they might both be trans, but they have to share the same marginalized identity, not just be, it wouldn't count, for example, if like I'm Mexican American and I wrote a book about a Chinese American girl, that doesn't count just because we're both women of color. Own Voices is important because in the past, publishing, well, and kind of right now, publishing has had kind of a lack of diversity problem. And recently, in some ways, this has been tried to be solved by adding more diverse characters into stories, but the authors themselves are still not sharing their marginalization of the character because they're usually established authors already. So publishing is taking their own established authors and then they're just like plopping this diversity in to fill a diversity quota, because right now, currently, diversity still seems like the trend thing, kind of like how before this it was like dystopian novels and before that it was vampires. Some people are trying to take advantage of it by like promoting their book as like, look at my diverse book. And some people I don't think are trying to take advantage. I think they are well-intentioned people who genuinely want to try and help with like quotation marks. But sometimes by helping, you end up doing, or by trying to help, even if your intentions are good, the results don't turn out good. For example, the most recent, or not the most recent, one of many, but the one that I feel most comfortable talking about, since I'm a part of the culture that is being represented and in some ways appropriated, is Maggie Stiefvater with her new book, All the Crooked Saints, which there was a lot of hoopla on Twitter about, or maybe it's just me because the people I follow were angry. I'll read her synopsis first. So for Other Crooked Saints. So obviously Maggie Stiefvater is a huge, huge author from the Raven Boys cycle. I don't know if any of you have read it. I have not, but I know she's very beloved. People love her books. Mm-hmm. And her new book is called All the Crooked Saints. And the synopsis reads, All the Crooked Saints takes place in the 1960s in Bicho Raro, Colorado, and follows the lives of three members of the Soria family. Each of which is searching for their own miracle. There's Beatrice, who appears to lack feelings but wants to study her mind. Daniel, the saint of Bicho Raro, a miracle worker for everyone but himself. And Joaquin, aka Diablo Diablo, who runs a pirate radio station at night. So, ignoring the Diablo Diablo part, which is just kind of ridiculous that you would name a character that, but what caught people's attention in was this EW interview that she did, where she basically kind of proceeded to erase the fact that she was appropriating a culture and kind of like further digging herself in this hole of proving that she didn't do enough research. If she wasn't doing research on like the big things, she definitely wasn't going to get the little things. So the main thing that that came out of it is her town that this all takes place in is called Bicho Raro, which the EW interviewer was very like, wow, that's so cool. Like, where'd you come up with that name? And she was like, well, I made it up, which she didn't make it up, but I made it up, and it means rare bird. And which then, like, does not mean rare bird, by the way. So Raro
off to a great start.
Which is troubling since that's like the name of her town and that's in the synopsis. And so like that's something like pretty huge. But anyway, so the way Spanish works is not just that you take an English word and add an O at the end, and that's what it means. That's what the word means. So raro, which is spelled like rare, but like with an O, does not mean rare. It means like strange. It's not rare, like weird. And bicho, like people started looking online. They're like, in what Spanish country does bicho mean rare? I mean bird. It does not mean that. It means bug. And in some countries, it means penis. So her book, the title, or her town does not mean rare bird. It means either strange bug or weird penis. So,
oh my God, this, I know that it's not actually funny because I get like how problematic this is, but oh my God.
And I've heard Maggie speak before. She was at an event that I went to with David Levithan, and shocker, I went to an event with David Levithan, and she was like, I went for him and she was there. I've never read anything besides the first Raven Boys book, but I've heard her speak, and I can't imagine her even pronouncing anything the way that Ariana did. I mean, like, it just, it would sound so unnatural coming from her. And I've only just heard the synopsis read by you.
Here is what I think happened. Maggie has come under fire in the past for some things, for like her lack of representation. And so very specifically, she was included on a panel about like diversity. And it was like a panel on diversity that had like no diverse representation on the panel, which was very bizarre. And so people were like, hey, they were calling out the panel. And then what she did is then she went and like doubled down and wrote a blog post on like how you can write outside of your experience and things like that, which was then kind of like further made upset people because they're like, but you're kind of like missing the entire point. We're not like calling you out as a human. We're just like saying this is a problem in general. So maybe think about how you can help. And so then I think her her response was like, well, okay, now I'll help by writing about Mexicans and help out those poor Mexicans to get some representation.
Oh,
but I think in her mind, I do think she's a well-intentioned person, but I think also just the weird penis part, like that I think is showing there's so many other things in this book that then worry me about what she's going to do as a Mexican American. So obviously this is a book that has very heavy magical realism, which is obviously a really, like, has been very influential in Latin American culture, right? Like for decades, it's that's like a thing in Latin American literature, is heavy on magical realism, or even like the films like Pan's Labyrinth, right? But then besides that, this also is like really heavily on based on family and faith, which I think are very, and music. Those are her three big things in here, she says. The family, the music, and the faith are a really big part of her novel. But the way that Mexican Americans relate to that is very different than even Mexicans or other Americans. And it's a very unique experience. So she would have to do a lot of research for that to play such a big part in her novel, which I feel like she didn't do based on her interview answers. Mm-hmm. And the historical context, this is set in the 1960s. The historical context of Mexican Americans in the 1960s is huge because that's when the Chicano movement was going on, and like Cesar Chavez, and that's when the walkouts were happening in high schools. And that was like a very inflammatory time. So that alone you have to do a ton of research on. So all of these things coupled together, I think, are troubling.
It's actually astounding to me because I took many, many years of Spanish. I was never fluent, unfortunately. I wish I had gotten to that point. But in those years, you know, even kind of being on the periphery, like I learned that different cultures have different meanings for the same words. And our teacher would tell us, like, you can say this word in this country and it's fine, it's a totally normal word, but like in this other country, it's kind of a slang term for this, so be careful if you go there and say this. It feels like that's something that is taught, I guess, to American students at a pretty basic level. I don't understand how she could be making mistakes this large. Like, maybe, okay, so maybe she never took a year of Spanish. Maybe she doesn't know anything about the culture and she's attempting to write this book. Why wouldn't you bring somebody in who can fact check for you? Especially considering she is a larger author.
The fact checking, I think, is a separate thing that sensitivity readers, which I do want to talk about later. That's but true. I think that this is part of a larger thing. So when people say, don't write, this isn't like a write what you know kind of thing, but it kind of, but I guess it kind of is. When you're writing outside of your own experience, you have to make sure, if you're going to do it, I think you need to ask yourself, is this your story to tell? Why do you want to tell this story? If you are going to tell the story of a marginalized person, then I think that you have to be willing to put in all of that effort. You have to be willing to do all the research and like live in that person's shoes. Because, for example, I think Justina Ireland, she's a really big like diversity advocate on book Twitter. What she compared it to, I love this metaphor, is window books versus mirror books. So are you looking through a window when you write, or are you looking in the mirror? And so, for example, this is a paragraph from one of her articles. She said, imagine you're writing a book about your neighbors. You might look in through their living room window and see a couch and a lamp and some gross shag carpet. Anyone who's looking into the house from your perspective would see the same thing, which is basically what happens when books make it through the publishing process with problematic elements. Someone inside that room may read the description you wrote and say, hey, that shag carpet is actually grass, and you didn't mention how that couch and lamp were left to me by my grandma. And you completely missed all the art on the walls. Oh, and why are you peeking into my living room like a creep anyway? If someone wants to write a description of my house, I can totally do that myself. So if you're going to do this, you need to ask yourself, why are you doing this? Why is this burning story that you have to tell? And why are you the best person to tell it? And if you decide that you are, I don't know why, but if you decide that you are the best person to tell this marginalized person's protagonist story, then you have to be willing to put in all the research and do all the work so that you feel like them at the end. And you are that. And I mean, you can't ever be that person, but you are that person. Like, another example would be like, I'm from Bakersfield, California, which is like a small city in some like podunk corner of the country. Like we all are, right? But imagine like you grew up in that city. I'm sure you probably feel like only people who grew up in your city know what it feels like to grow up in that city. And someone can move there when they're older. Like when you're an adult, you can move somewhere new and you can get a feel of the area and you can learn and meet the neighbors and you can become a part of the city. But you can't ever really know what it feels like to grow up in the city unless you grew up in the city. That's different than moving there when you're older. That was how I tried to explain it to myself.
So I know this is skipping ahead in your notes a little bit, but I'm really interested in this line here about what privileged writers can do to help diverse books, since we're kind of on that topic already. Because, for example, I think there is a difference between writing a story like Maggie Stiefvater is writing versus a story that is inclusive of diverse characters but isn't necessarily telling their story, like maybe an issue story, like we talk about issue episodes of television all the time and that kind of thing. And the person that always comes to mind for me, of course, nobody's going to be surprised, is Rick Riordan. Lately, Rick Riordan has been including a lot of diverse characters in his books. Characters of color, characters of different sexualities. He has a trans character now. He has a Muslim American character. But obviously, he is a white, middle-aged, straight man. And I think his name brings a lot of attention. Obviously, he's been writing for a really long time, and he is very popular. His books sell so many copies. And I think, on the one hand, it is a great thing to see somebody like him writing about diverse characters, because it does bring a lot of attention to issues that these types of people go through. But on the other hand, it's not his story. So that is confusing to me in some ways. And I don't know the difference, like the line you have to walk between own voices, but also being an ally.
So he's a different case. I think what Rick Riordan is doing is very different than what Maggie Stiefvater has done. So I think the championing for own voices is because of the way publishing works, there's only a certain amount of allotted spots for books of a specific genre. And unfortunately, the Black book, or like a book about a Black girl, is a genre right now because diversity is a genre. So by making it by making the main character the protagonist, like a Mexican American, like Maggie Stiefvater did, she's taking the spot of someone else, of a writer of color. So like Jacqueline Woodson, she's a very popular author who I'll talk about again later when I'm promoting books that I love. She said, "We want the chance to tell our own stories and to tell them openly and honestly. We don't want publishers to say, well, we already published a book about that, and then find that the book did not speak the truth about us, but rather told someone an outsider's idea of who we are." So that's the issue with own voices, is you want people for like sensitive stories, you want people to be able to tell that, or not even sensitive, like fantasy and things like that count too. There was another issue with the book cover, which we can talk about later. But in terms of Rick Riordan, I think that he is being a positive ally. That's my own personal opinion, that I think he's doing it right, because obviously like Percy Jackson, which I love, I think it did start off pretty white, you know, like pretty, but I think as he like educated himself and became more aware, he did start including more diverse kids. Like you said, like the trans kid, that's awesome, and things like that. But I think that's different because what he is doing, I think, is just representative of the world as a whole. I don't think Rick Riordan is taking anyone's spot, if you know what I mean. He's his genre or his spot is the Greek mythology or right. Roman mythology. That's what his books are about. His kids just happen to be different colors because that's what the world is like. And that's what we mean about, that's what like we need diverse books and diversity in literature is like adding in people who look like the world around us. I also think that he's done, I mean, I'm not sure if he has, but I feel like he probably has because he has fairly good representation, hired sensitivity readers. So sensitivity readers are a great thing that privileged authors can do when they are writing about marginalized people. And that's hiring someone who is from that marginalized experience to read your book and offer criticism. And then when they do offer critique and criticism, to really take that in and try and make that better so that you're speaking from, I mean, you're always going to be speaking from an outsider's perspective, but you have someone's experience represented. So I think that that's really important for minor characters or secondary characters, but that's really difficult to do with the main character. So for example, if you're going to hire a sensitivity reader for this book that she wrote, where like everyone is Mexican American, then like why isn't the sensitivity reader just writing that then at that point? Why are you the one writing it? But sensitivity readers can be really helpful. It's also not an like all out cop out. So for example, the book I'm reading right now, Wind Witch, has a trans character in it, and he's like a secondary character that shows up in the book. But Susan Dennard, the author, she hired a sensitivity reader to really go over that with her and make sure that the experience and that the character goes through in the book mirrored his own experience in transitioning. So, and the way that it's been received by the trans community has been split. Some people feel like it was representative of their experience. Some people feel like it wasn't. But at least when you hire a sensitivity reader, you're not always going to get it right. In fact, most of the time, I think, as we all know, like in life, you're going to get it wrong. But at least when you hire...
That's just that just brought me down.
Well, I mean, I do. We all mess up. We're human. Yes, yeah. But at least when you hire a sensitivity reader, you can say, look, I didn't get everyone's experience right, but I got... Because nobody's the same. We're not all a monolith. Right.
But at least you didn't get it wrong out of ignorance.
Yes, you got one person. This is one person's story. So, and that person's story is authentic versus mm-hmm. just relying on stereotypes.
Yes.
I don't know if I answered your question.
You absolutely did. Different. Yeah, you absolutely did. That's basically what I was thinking anyway. So, yes, we are on the same page.
Oh, and how else? So, hiring sensitivity readers, I think, is a big help for non-main characters. And but also, I mean, if you want to help the diverse books movement, just like there are plenty of diverse authors, just promote their books. If you're, especially if you're a big author, helping to promote their books can be huge. And that helps create like authentic diversity. Because you don't just want, it's like on screen when you watch TV, you don't just want, it doesn't make it, like if you have diverse or like people on screen, you also want diverse people behind the screen. And I think that's similar on the page as well. Because at the end of the day, especially when you're writing for young adults, you have to remember the people that you're affecting. It's, I mean, when you write a book, I guess it is always about you, but if you're writing for young adults, the most important people are the teens and kids that you're affecting, the people who pick up these books. And when you read a book when you're a kid, you're so vulnerable. That book becomes a part of you. And so it's so disheartening to pick up a book that you think, oh, this is going to, like, this is like me. And then you read it and it's not like you. And it can be very dehumanizing sometimes, I think, to be feel like you're being reduced to stereotypes. So I think it's really important that we think about how can we best support readers, especially young readers.
Mm-hmm. And I think as readers, it's important not to bury your head in the sand. It's important to be aware of books like this and to buy books like this, because that's what's going to change the industry. And I think we're seeing an upward movement in diversity across a lot of different mediums, and especially on television and all of that, because people are speaking out about why this is important these days. And I mean, it's not perfect. It's nowhere near where it should be, but I think the conversations are being had, and that is the first step in the right direction. So if you see books with diversity and own voices books, it's important to go out and buy them.
Yeah. And also just listening to criticism, because you could love, like for example, with Maggie, you could love all of her books and think that she's great and then be like, oh, all these people are picking on her new book and this is ridiculous. But you have to be open to listening to criticism. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't just be like, oh, well, I like this person and I like this book and everything is fine and whatever. Listen to what the problems are, because then you'll probably start to see them everywhere else and realize what's going on.
And if it's a problem that you can't relate to, I think it's really helpful to try and fit it into a way that you can relate. Libba Bray wrote an excellent, so Ellen O wrote something about why own voices are important, and she's an author, and she got a lot of criticism. People were really angry at her because people don't like being told what they can and can't write, which is not what she was saying. She was just saying, if you're going to do it, you should do it right for the sake of readers everywhere. But then Libba Bray, she wrote something in defense of her. So she's was being like an ally, and she's great, and I love her. And she, I really recommend reading her essay. She kind of put it into context for how you can try and make things like walking in other people's shoes, trying to understand them and why something that might not bother you bothers someone else. And she made this great reference to like an old lady at her church and how her the pastor started using curse words to show her why you can't use other bad words. But it was great. So maybe we can put a link to it, but it's a pretty great read.
I just pulled it up and there is a link in the show notes.
Oh, yay.
Sorry, I haven't been speaking. I've been trying to capture all your wisdom in words for the listeners to look at.
Sometimes, I mean, that's the best thing you can do, I think, sometimes is to listen. I think that's something we should all learn from. I know I definitely have my blind spots that I need to get better at.
That's my favorite part, too, is listening to you, listening to other people who have these experiences different from my own, because I think us in particular, and a lot of our listeners and a lot of the people that we are friends with that run in the same circles, like, we are always constantly trying to learn. And because we're on the internet and because we're in fandom and everything, you tend to be very aware of the trending topics and the things that people are talking about these days. And the best thing you can do sometimes, other than buying these kind of books, is to just look into what is being discussed and why it's a problem and seeing what you can do to help. So I always try to kind of keep my ear to the ground, because once you are aware that these kind of conversations are taking place, you will see them everywhere and you will see how much of a problem it is. So, you know, be part of the solution by at least being aware of the issues.
So maybe I thought we could recommend some of our favorite Own Voices books. I know I have a few that I love or grew up reading, and I have a long list. If no one else has any, I have a long list.
Please okay. Feel free to share.
First, I want to start with a Roxane Gay quote, because I love her. Even though she scares me a little bit, I don't know if I could be in the same room as her, because she's so intense.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 1,000.
I admire her from afar.
But I will probably never go to her readings, because I'm so intimidated.
I'd be just so scared she would, like, I'm definitely not as smart as her, so she would definitely, like, get me in shape. And she said, "You think you are alone until you find books about girls like you," which I like when she said that. I was like, oh, that is so true. So the first book that ever made me feel not alone is The House on Mango Street by Sandra Cisneros, which was written like forever ago now. And it's a book that I think a lot of people have to read in school, but I absolutely love it. It's about a girl growing up in Chicago in her Mexican-American neighborhood, and that was the first time that I felt, it's like, oh my gosh, this person gets me. She knows my family. She knows all the people I have to deal with around, like, school, and I was like, oh, and nobody gets me, because I like to read, and, but just, like, people's problems, and also realizing that it's not always problems. There's so much beauty in the world, even in, like, clouds. So I love that book. And also another one, Esperanza Rising by Pam Munoz Ryan. So Pam Munoz Ryan is also like a pretty big children's author, and she is Mexican-American from the Central Valley, where I'm from, and in California. And Esperanza Rising is based on the story of her grandmother, which is eerily similar to my own grandmother's story, which is probably why I gravitated to it so much. But this is based on the story of her grandmother, who had to leave her rich house in Mexico and come work as a farm worker in California. And so, yeah, it talks a lot about, it's a kind of historical fiction about, like, during the Great Depression, farm workers in California. And it's very good. And also Becoming Naomi Leon by Pam Munoz Ryan, which is a contemporary novel about Naomi Leon, who lives in a trailer park with her grandma, and her struggle with, she's biracial. So her grandma, I believe, is white, and she's recently become reunited with her father, or she's thinking about her father. It's been a long time since I read that book, but I loved it as a kid. And I believe Pam Munoz Ryan is biracial, so that's similar to her experience. And also Brown Girl Dreaming by Jacqueline Woodson, which is also autobiographical, based on her story growing up in the South and with her grandparents, who were my favorites. I adored her grandparents in the story. And then later on in New York with her mom. So those are four of mine. And I don't know if you guys have any, otherwise I can read a long list.
You can feel free to continue if you have more. I'm like definitely going to go check out some of these.
Okay, so there's also El Defo by Cece Bell, which is Cece Bell is mostly deaf. I was going to say partially deaf, but when I saw her at Comic-Con, she said that she was mostly deaf now. But as a child, she started going deaf, and so she had to get a hearing aid. And so El Defo is based on when she was a kid, she would like pretend that she was a superhero because her hearing aid gave her magic powers to, she could like hear things across the school, which is pretty cool. So then it's a graphic novel she wrote and illustrated about her as a, she's a, her and her friends are all like little rabbits, and she's a superhero with, because her hearing aid lets her hear things from far away. And it's very, very cute. Some other books, some, most of these I have not read, but they are worth mentioning because they're fairly new YA books. So The Education of Margot Sanchez by Lilian Rivera. Hypebull did an interview with her, and she is great and delightful. Labyrinth Lost is a magical realism book written by Latin American author. I cannot pronounce her first name. It's so cool. Zoraida, I think. Zoraida. Cordova. And some other books. Matt De La Pena is a great author. Gabby Rivera, who's writing the new America, is that what they're called? The new comics. It's a Marvel comic. I believe it's called America, which is not very descriptive, but she's like a lesbian Latina superhero. Anyway, it's supposed to be like very good. Cindy Pond Serpentine, Meg Medina, The Girl from Everywhere by Heidi Heilig, who I'm not sure if I pronounced her name either correct either, but The Girl from Everywhere. Written in the Stars, When Dimple Met Rishi, that's a new book that I think we're going to cover soon. Adam Silvera, who I love, Shadow Shaper is also a great book. Wild Beauty is coming out in October of 2017, I believe, and it's very similar to Maggie Stiefvater's book. It's like a Latin American realism, magical realism book, but it is written by a Latin American author. So yeah.
All wonderful sounding recommendations.
And if you guys have any recommendations, please send them my way.
Yes, please feel free to leave comments on our podcast post. So other people can find books that you guys are interested in as well. Thank you so much, Ariana, for coming on and talking to us about Own Voices and diversity in YA. Really appreciate it. And if you guys like Ariana and want her to come back on to Book Hype, please go bug her on Twitter.
If you don't like me, please don't bug me on Twitter. Yeah.
Be nice. Be nice. What's your Twitter handle?
At Ariana, A-R-I-A-N-A, underscore Q-Z.
Awesome. So please tell her you would like her back on. Hopefully she can come back on to talk to us about Y'all West, unless she is guarding those secrets. And then
so that nobody else comes. I can have them all to myself, all the cupcakes.
Yes. But yeah, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it. And hope that it won't be so long of a process to get you on again.
Yeah, this was like a bucket list item. I'm so excited.
Nice.
I was finally able to make it on.
Yay. Next week, I'm not sure what we're going to bring you next week. Hopefully it's another surprise fun episode. We are still trying to catch up on everything we promised you. Have not forgotten, but thought this was a good episode to sneak in there as well. So at some point we will be talking about Jane Austen and Dash and Lily's Book of Dares, plus our book exchange.
I am gonna have to reread Dash and Lily's Book of Dares because I read it in December.
It's probably, actually, you know what, it is my fault. It is 100% my fault because Kristen has read it as well, so that's on me. I will try to do better. Thank you again, everybody, for listening in. And if you pick up any of Ariana's recommendations, let us know what you thought of it. So until next week, I'm Karen.
I'm Ariana.
And I'm Brittany.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.